Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call's One Planet series. Every year, the Environmental Working Group releases the Dirty Dozen. It's a list of the fruits and vegetables with the highest amounts of pesticides. To put it together, the EWG analyzes Department of Agriculture test data to identify which conventionally grown fruits and vegetables are the most and least contaminated with pesticide residues. This year, kale is on the list for the first time in a decade. According to the report, kale has higher pesticide residue than nearly all other produce found on supermarket shelves. The report found that more than 92% of conventionally grown kale samples had two or more pesticide residues, and a single sample could contain up to 18 different residues. On this year's list, kale ranks third after strawberries and spinach. The data also revealed more than 90% of samples of conventionally grown kale, strawberries, apples, cherries, spinach, and nectarines tested positive for two or more pesticide residues. Overall, nearly 70% of the conventionally grown produce sold in the United States comes with pesticide residues, according to the analysis. On today's One Planet series, we will discuss the report and find out what safety measures we can take to ensure that we're eating clean and safe fruits and vegetables. How can we trust what we buy in grocery stores or at the farmers market? We will also talk about the Clean 15. That is a list of conventionally grown fruits and vegetables with the lowest amount of residues. And that list includes avocados, asparagus, pineapples, frozen sweet peas, onions, and eggplants. Joining us to talk about all of this is Sydney Evans, a science analyst at the Environmental Working Group. Before joining the EWG, Sydney worked as an environmental health specialist at a local health department in Indiana. And Sydney joins us on the line from Washington, D.C. Hi, Sydney. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, I'm happy to be here.
Well, it's great to have you. We usually do a show every year about the Dirty Dozen. And before diving in and talking about this year's list, can you talk about how this is compiled? As I mentioned, you all analyze Department of Agriculture test data to identify which conventionally grown fruits and veggies are the most and least contaminated. How do you go about doing that?
Absolutely. So I think it's important to note that we do have the Dirty Dozen and the Clean 15 list, but those are just parts, small parts, of the overall Shopper's Guide to Pesticides and Produce. So for the 2019 Shopper's Guide, we analyzed the results of over 40,000 USDA and FDA tests for pesticide residues in produce. So once we have that data, we then use our own algorithm that determines, based on the variety of pesticides, the amount of pesticides present on produce, to come up with our rankings and the rest of the conclusions and data that we report in the Shopper's Guide. And like you said, the big takeaway from that guide is 70% of the produce comes with pesticide residues. And this is conventionally grown produce. It's not organic, so we'll keep that in mind. And we use a few different characteristics that go into our algorithm that help us determine what these rankings should be and how to reduce pesticide burden in your body when you're choosing what to get at the grocery store. So we look at what samples have detectable pesticides at all, if there's more than one pesticide, and then, of course, the amount of pesticide found on a single sample overall on that particular crop. The maximum number or the total number of pesticides found on that crop. So there's a lot that goes into this algorithm. And our science team determined that this type of approach best captures the uncertainties about risks and consequences of pesticide exposure. There's a lot that we don't know about pesticide exposure, especially when we're consuming mixtures of many different pesticides at once. So that's kind of the gist of how we come up with this guide and with those rankings.
How does the USDA do their testing? Given that we're talking about conventional fruits and vegetables, again, this is not organic, where does the USDA get these fruits and vegetables?
So these are fruits and vegetables that are available in stores. So these are things that consumers could go into their grocery store, pick up, and buy. And it's also important to note that they are peeled and washed before testing.
Oh, wow.
Probably a little more vigorously than most of us are doing at home. So one of the big takeaways of our guide is to make sure that if you are eating conventional fruits and vegetables, to make sure you're washing them, because the numbers that we report in our guide, the rankings, are all based on washed and peeled fruits and vegetables. So the amount of pesticides that you could be consuming would actually possibly be higher if you're not properly washing your fruits and vegetables.
Can you talk more about that? So if someone does a thorough wash, what does that mean? And then if you do a good job, you can actually reduce the amount of pesticides on, say, that your kale salad?
So there are some data out there that look at produce before it's been washed. That was not a part of our guide. So at this point, we just want to take the protective approach and assume that the pesticide levels are going to be higher. However, not everything can be washed off. That's what our guide goes to show, is that they're still there even after being peeled and washed.
How often does the USDA test fruits and vegetables for pesticides? I was surprised to learn that kale has not been tested for 10 years.
Right. So they do testing on a regular rolling basis, but not all fruits and vegetables are tested every year, and not all pesticides are tested every year either. So kale is a great example. I mean, you saw it was one of the major takeaways from our guide this year, is that it jumped up to number 3 on the list. And that wasn't because all of a sudden there's a bunch more pesticide use. It was because it just hadn't been tested in that long, which was surprising to us, seeing as how kale is such a popular health food. It's got a lot of nutritional benefit. It's been increasing in the amount that's being produced and the number of farms that are producing it. So it just kind of goes to show some of the gaps in the current system that we think could be a little more protective of public health. Kale wasn't tested, and when you look and compare the test results of our latest testing that were incorporated into the 2019 guide compared to the last testing before that, which I think was in 2009, everything went up. The percent of samples, the number of pesticides detected, the amount of pesticides detected, which is a little scary. So we'd like to see USDA improve their testing program by doing more fruits and vegetables every year, ideally everything, and testing for more pesticides.
So let's talk about kale, since this was one of the surprises on this year's Dirty Dozen list. In the USDA's round of tests, it found that more than 92% of conventionally grown kale samples had at least 2 or more pesticide residues, and some samples contained residues from as many as 18 different pesticides. So tell us more about what you found.
Sure. So there's obviously a variety of pesticides that are getting into kale. They're being used for different kinds of things. One of the things that we found this year was that one of the pesticides that came up on 60% of the kale samples is called Dactyl. And maybe shocking to some is that we've known that Dactyl is a possible human carcinogen since 1995. So there's a possible carcinogen in our kale. Not exactly pleasant to think about. And we've known this for some time, and it's still showing up. It's showing up in increasing levels. It is found in a few other foods, but the kale is the big one. It's where a lot of the Dactyl is being used. Based on the latest data, over 500,000 pounds of Dactyl were used in 2016. Mm-hmm. And beyond being a potential carcinogen, it's been linked to liver and thyroid tumors. It's a potential endocrine disruptor. A study in California looked at teen girls in farm communities and saw that 50% of them were being exposed to this because it can travel long distances. It's not just getting into our food from use, but you know, the communities nearby are also potentially at risk. Mm. And it's also possible that it's contaminated with other compounds that could also be toxic to human health.
This is interesting, Sydney, because we've done so many shows on pesticides over the years, and I don't remember any of our guests talking about Dactyl. Again, it's DCPA or Dactyl, D-A-C-T-H-A-L. Can you tell us more about this chemical and who makes it?
So I am not 100% sure who the manufacturer is now. We saw a drop over time in the Dactyl production because a while back they saw that it was a water contaminant. Mm-hmm. It's highly persistent in the environment. It contaminates water pretty easily. So the original manufacturer started backing off production based on some of the findings that were coming out a while back. But I believe a new manufacturer has picked it up and put it back into production a while ago, which is why we're still able to find it. It's still showing up on our kale samples in some states. So that's one of the bigger things. And there was a report actually put out in 2015 by the Washington State Department of Agriculture that recommended stopping all use of Dactyl in the state because it is persistent and because it's a contaminant, because it's a possible human carcinogen, but we're still seeing it today.
You said 500,000 pounds of Dactyl were used on fruits and vegetables in 2016?
That's correct, based on the latest data, yes.
And this is a pesticide that has been prohibited for use on crops in the European Union since 2009. So it's been banned in the EU for 10 years, and it's still being used in the United States.
Yes, there are a few cases of similar things like that where we see them banned in other places, but they're still allowed to be used here. And it's a little scary. It shows some of the gaps in our current system. So a good example of that is another pesticide called chlorpyrifos. And I think it was around 2014, 2017, the EPA began reviewing chlorpyrifos. There was a lot of data out there that showed that it was a pretty nasty pesticide. It had a lot of health effects. And their scientists came up with their review, and they said, wow, this stuff really isn't safe. They concluded that babies and pregnant women were getting more than 5 times what's safe, that children were getting up to 15 times what's safe, and that's based on the levels that are in our food now. So then the big thing with chlorpyrifos is that it's a neurotoxicant. It can damage the nervous system, even in small doses. Children have been found that after exposure to it, it's impairing their IQ. Mm. So this is dangerous stuff we're talking about, and EPA's own scientists concluded that what we're exposed to right now is not safe. But so it was proposed that all uses of chlorpyrifos have been banned. Slowly over time, the restrictions have been increasing on chlorpyrifos use, and finally they proposed a ban on it altogether. However, at the last minute, the current administration overturned that proposed ban on the chemical. And so chlorpyrifos is still on the market. It's still being used, and it's not up for re-registration again and review until, I think, 2022. And I think 5 million pounds of this chemical are sprayed on crops, up to 50 different crops that it's approved for every year.
Wow.
So this is what we're looking at up until someone finally decides that chlorpyrifos is not safe, it's too toxic, and that it needs to be banned.
In the Dirty Dozen, what fruits and vegetables are sprayed with chlorpyrifos?
So like I said, it's approved for up to 50 crops, so it ends up on a lot of things, but one of the things, so when you look at our list of Dirty Dozen, it's actually more of a baker's dozen. It's hot peppers are included at number 13 because we found that they were contaminated with a few different toxic insecticides, and chlorpyrifos is one of those. Hmm. And we thought that chlorpyrifos and these other insecticides were scary enough that we wanted to, even though hot peppers didn't meet our traditional ranking criteria, we wanted to include them on the list, especially for people who are eating a lot of hot peppers. Because if you're like me, you really like hot peppers. So we want people who are consuming a lot of them to know that this is in their food and to buy organic when possible.
And I just want to read a press release that the Environmental Working Group put out just recently. It's called 2 years and 10 million pounds since Trump EPA blocked ban of brain damaging pesticide. And they're talking about chlorpyrifos. On Thursday, this is last Thursday, Senator Tom Udall, Democrat from New Mexico, and a dozen of his fellow senators introduced legislation to ban chlorpyrifos, an insecticide that can harm children's brains and nervous systems. But if the Trump administration had listened to EPA scientists, the legislation would not be needed. 2 years ago, then EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt sided with the pesticide lobby over the agency's scientists in an 11th-hour decision to abort a proposal to ban chlorpyrifos from use on food crops. If Pruitt had listened to his own scientists, as you said, Sydney, the ban could have taken full effect last year. But now the EPA will not reevaluate its safety until 2022. We've done a lot of shows about this, but can you remind us just how strong and powerful the chemical lobby is? I mean, especially when you're talking about a pesticide like chlorpyrifos.
Sure. So, government affairs and regulations are not my specialty. I'm much more comfortable with the analysis and the numbers. But, I mean, the case with chlorpyrifos just goes to show that there's all this evidence from peer-reviewed studies and good quality research from organizations like EWG. And then it's really a point when you see that the administration, the EPA's own scientists said, no, this is not safe, no, this is not safe, and yet they overturned it at the last minute. It was overturned, and it's not banned. I mean, I think that example speaks for itself.
Right. And according to the EWG, on December 16th, 2016, just after Trump's election, Dow Chemical, which makes chlorpyrifos, donated $1 million to his inaugural committee. So according to scientific research, this insecticide can harm children's brains and nervous systems. As you said, it's on peppers. What do we know about what effect it has on adults?
It's a neurotoxicant. The effects on children tend to be worse because they're growing, they're developing, they're much more at risk. The kids take in more air, they breathe more air, they eat more food, they drink more water per pound of body weight than adults do. So that's why they're more at risk. But this is a toxic pesticide that is no good for anyone. Mm.
Today we're speaking with Sydney Evans, a science analyst at the Environmental Working Group. We're talking about the yearly Dirty Dozen. It's a list of the fruits and vegetables with the highest amounts of pesticides. The data found more than 90% of samples of conventionally grown kale, strawberries, apples, cherries, spinach, and nectarines tested positive for two or more pesticide residues. Overall, 70% of the conventionally grown produce sold in the United States comes with pesticide residues. And then they also put out the Clean 15, and this is a list of conventionally grown fruits and vegetables with the lowest amount of residues, including avocados, onions, eggplants, frozen sweet peas, asparagus, and pineapples. And you can find these lists at yourcallradio.org. This is a pre-taped Your Call, so unfortunately we cannot take any of your phone calls. And Sydney, since you're a science analyst, you worked at a local health department in Indiana before coming to the Environmental Working Group. Can you talk about just the new data that we have and what we're now learning about the potential harms of pesticides?
Sure. So you had just asked about the possible effects on adults, and while chlorpyrifos has a much bigger effect on children and their development, there are problems for adults as well. And a lot of these recent studies are looking at organic versus conventional diets, people getting exposed to pesticides in their diets. And the big thing with this is that a lot of the safety evaluations that these pesticides go under, they look at just one pesticide at a time. But going back to kale, we found up to 18 pesticides in one sample of kale. That's not across all kale. That's a single sample could have that much. And a lot of these safety reviews don't look at that mixture of pesticides that we're taking in. So a lot of the latest science is trying to account for that. So a study that came out of Harvard University in 2018, they used a similar exposure algorithm to what EWG uses for our shopper's guide to pesticides and produce. And when they found that what people were reporting eating, produce had higher levels of pesticide versus lower levels of pesticide, they actually made a link to high pesticide consumption and fertility problems. And that was just one study. Another looked at, you know, making sure that if you're actually eating these contaminated fruits and vegetables, if it's actually showing up in your body, and it is, it made a pretty big impact. A lot of studies link pesticides with all kinds of effects. For another one that's particular to children with detectable permethrin levels in their urine were twice as likely to be diagnosed with ADHD. Wow. I mean, there's a lot of issues. And one of the biggest ones was a organic diet study that was in the American Medical Association Journal, had tens of thousands of participants, almost 70,000 participants they looked at. And they found that the people that were eating more organic food, which of course is going to have low or no pesticides, had a 25% reduction in cancers over those that were consuming the more contaminated conventional produce. So we're seeing a lot. There's a lot of studies out there, and there's a lot of new information. It's high-quality research, and that goes back to, you know, the current regulations, the current administration. Now, while we are seeing some issues with, for example, the ban on chlorpyrifos not going through, it is important to note that this issue is not new. A lot of the regulations that we have for pesticides in produce and what people are exposed to, a lot of them are very outdated. They're not based on the latest science, and that's something we need to change. Mm.
We will talk about the organic study right after a quick break, but I just want to ask you, what's so difficult about this issue is if someone is, you know, if someone has cancer, you cannot say, well, this is because you ate this pesticide when you were young, or you had this pesticide in your water, right? That's what's so hard about this, is you cannot make a direct connection when someone has a disease. And I mean, we always talk about this when we talk about pesticides, which is really too bad. I mean, do you think we'll ever get to that point?
So I think that's why these types of organic diet studies are so important, because so many people are exposed at low levels to a lot of different chemicals, pesticides included. So it's really hard to pinpoint. It's, you know, when you're exposed to 18 different pesticides on your kale salad, or 81 different pesticides, which is the total amount that we found in strawberries, by the way, 23 on a single sample of strawberries. You know, you're getting all of this, and it gets really hard to pinpoint exactly what chemical may have made that effect, how long it took to have that effect. But that's why these diet studies are so important, because we're able to look and see that the reducing the total burden of pesticides in your diet does make a difference. So that's why we use the algorithm and the methodology that we do for our shopper's guide. It's looking at that total number, that total body burden, and trying to help people reduce that overall, because we've seen that maybe we can't pinpoint, you know, specifically which pesticides for exactly which thing for individual cases, but overall we do see a reduction for people that are choosing to have no pesticide diets or low pesticide diets. And it really is making a difference in people's lives today. And I think that's really what we need to, you know, individual people, I think that's what we really need to focus on while we work out the regulations that maybe still have some gaps.
Right. And coming up after a break, we will talk about the importance of eating organic and also access, because we know that there are so many food deserts around the country. About 2 million people live more than 1 mile away from a supermarket and don't own a car. So we'll also talk about the importance of access. Today, we're joined by Sydney Evans, science analyst at the Environmental Working Group. Their mission is to empower people to live healthier lives in a healthier environment. And today we're talking about pesticides and the Dirty Dozen, and we'll also talk about the Clean 15. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this. Thank you. This is Your Calls One Planet series. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today we are joined by Sydney Evans, a science analyst at the Environmental Working Group. Their mission is to empower people to live healthier lives in a healthier environment. And the Environmental Working Group releases the Dirty Dozen list every year. It's a list of the fruits and vegetables with the highest amount of pesticides. They get this data from the Department of Agriculture. And what they do is test conventionally grown fruits and vegetables, which are sold in stores across the country. And it found more than 90% of samples of conventionally grown kale, strawberries, apples, cherries, spinach, and nectarines tested positive for two or more pesticide residues. The group also discovered that 225 different pesticides are commonly consumed by citizens in the United States. So, Sydney, we were talking about just the kale and the various pesticides. You mentioned that there are 23 pesticides on strawberries. What else really stood out for you on this year's Dirty Dozen list?
A couple more standouts probably be. I mentioned strawberries, right? So we went into detail on kale. Strawberries, we found it's at the top of the list. It's been near the top of the list for a while now, and we saw 81 different pesticides altogether off all the samples of strawberries, which is crazy.
Wow.
It shouldn't take 81 pesticides to grow strawberries. And even though there was a huge burden of pesticides on these strawberries, very few samples exceeded the legal tolerances, which once again goes back to maybe some gaps in our current regulatory system that really aren't protective of human health. And to kind of put that in perspective for strawberries, in California, it was found that 300 pounds of pesticides were applied per acre of strawberry production, conventional strawberry production. And now I think that's a lot, but maybe for some people who don't have any kind of perspective on that, corn is also considered a pretty pesticide-intensive crop, and it averages a use of 5 pounds per acre. So 300 pounds of pesticides per acre versus 5 pounds per acre. And it just doesn't seem necessary. I mean, we know strawberries can be grown organically. So 81 pesticides, 300 pounds per acre, that just seems like too much.
What explains that? Why are so many pesticides being used to grow strawberries?
Pesticides, you know, are designed to kill pests, whether it's weeds, insects, molds. So different crops, you see this variation because different crops are at different risks for different pests. And strawberries, of course, you know, people are not the only ones that like strawberries. Bugs and all kinds of critters like to have them. They're on the ground, so weeds can grow up around them. So that's the general reason, you know, why pesticides are used in any case, really. But to me, that's kind of the question, isn't it? If we know that we can grow strawberries organically, we don't have to use these 81 pesticides. Why are they being used?
Mm. And I've been noticing that you can buy so many fruits now and vegetables year round, where that was not the case 10 years ago. Do you see a difference in the fruits and vegetables grown in the United States versus other countries?
So our, you know, report just takes into account what's available in the United States. However, you know, I think spinach was another one that was near the top of the list. And I think a lot of that was, you know, 83 samples had residues of pesticides that are actually prohibited for spinach. And those are grown in the United States, so it's not necessarily in all cases things that have come in from outside the United States. A lot of that could be, one option is improper use of pesticides, but drift is also possible. Going back to Daxel, that's something that can travel in the air for thousands of miles, in some studies have found. It's a really long distance, so you end up getting drift onto other crops and other fields. which could potentially increase the burden of pesticides that we're getting in our diet and contributing to the number of pesticides that end up on any given crop.
And have you seen the, obviously the level and the use of pesticides has just gone up drastically. You talked about pests, but what else explains this? Why are so many pesticides used today?
That is a fantastic question, one that I would love to know the answer to. But the counterpoint to that, which is really great, is that through work from people, you know, in organizations like EWG, people are becoming aware of this issue. And we're also seeing a growing demand for organic produce, for lower pesticide produce, which is a good thing, and it's a counterpoint. So hopefully, you know, that is going to make an impact, you know, from the consumer side of things, and hopefully producers and farmers and, you know, regulatory agencies will see that demand and see that attention and maybe try and make a difference in that increasing level in use of pesticides.
Let's talk about how this affects farm workers and their children. The Nation just had a piece called More Than 90% of Americans Have Pesticides in Their Bodies. And there's so much interesting information in this piece. Researchers at UC Berkeley recently asked teenage girls living in the intensively farmed Salinas Valley to wear silicone wristbands, which soak up environmental chemicals like a sponge. They wanted to see, you know, what their pesticide exposure was like. Well, what did they find? What we've been talking about, Dactyl and chlorpyrifos, thank you. Dactyl and chlorpyrifos were among the most frequently detected pesticides for these Latina girls. And the concentrations of Dactyl were three times higher for those who lived close to fields. So they're finding that these pesticides are linked to early puberty, impaired fertility, increased breast cancer risk, suggesting that these young girls whose brains and breasts undergo rapid development during puberty may be particularly vulnerable to these pesticide exposures. And this is in California.
Right. So, yeah, the only people affected aren't, you know, through the diet. It's not just necessarily what's ending up on our food. Of course, the people that are applying these pesticides, mixing them, farming in the field, living nearby even, are potentially at risk. Like I mentioned, drift is a definite possibility for some compounds more than others. Dactyl can travel hundreds to thousands of miles, so it goes a lot further than just what's in your diet.
Right. And then, of course, the farm workers are exposed to this directly. The pesticide residues can follow the farm workers home from the fields, on their clothing, on their shoes, and then collect in the dust on floors where their babies and their toddlers play. And there's a lot of data out about, you know, farm workers having premature babies, children with autism. And this is in California, where, you know, there's a lot of data about pesticides. There's some rules about pesticides, but still, California growers applied over 11 million pounds of pesticides to produce 3 billion pounds of strawberries. So we can talk about what the EPA is doing under Trump, but, you know, what about California Democrats? Are they taking any action on this, and could they?
Right. So that, I mean, it goes back to people need to kind of speak up and make a demand for this. This is our whole goal with getting this kind of information out there and developing this guide, putting it in consumers' hands. We want to fill in the gaps where federal agencies or state agencies are falling short. And, of course, in addition to providing this information, we can offer this guidance and these tips on how to deal with chemicals and pollutants that we're coming across every day. And so that is the goal for EPA, is to empower consumers and hopefully by doing so change regulations, whether it's at a state level or at a federal level.
Today we're joined by Sydney Evans, science analyst at the Environmental Working Group, an organization that does very important work to empower people to live healthier lives in a healthier environment. And we're talking about the yearly Dirty Dozen list. It's a list of fruits and vegetables conventionally grown with the highest amount of pesticides. And they also have the Clean 15, which is a list of fruits and vegetables with the lowest amount of residues. Let's talk about a little bit more about what we're learning about organic fruits and vegetables. You mentioned the study that was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. And the findings are part of a French study that tracked nearly 70,000 people. So this is a lot of people, three quarters of them women, assessing how often they ate organic foods, including fruits, vegetables, fish, eggs, grains. And after 4 years, researchers found a significantly lower risk of postmenopausal breast cancer, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and other lymphomas in the group of people who ate the most organic food. I mean, this is amazing. The greatest reduction of risk, 86%, was seen for non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. That is just a massive number, 86%.
Right. And that's not the only study. It's not the first one. It's certainly not going to be the last one. So as an example, and I want to make sure that people understand that, you know, oh, I've been eating Dirty Dozen conventional crops, you know, my whole life. It's too late for me now. And that is definitely not the case. There was another study, I think, that just came out recently. It was February. They looked at people who were eating primarily conventional foods, and they detected 40 different pesticides in their urine samples. But all of those people then, as part of the study, switched over to an organic diet from that conventional, and they saw within just 6 days a 60% reduction. And that included things like chlorpyrifos, malathion, which is another probable human carcinogen, and neonicotinoid pesticides, which are the big ones now. They're fastest growing, and they've been shown to harm bees. So there's definitely a difference that everyone can make immediately in their diet and in their body burden. And that's why these kinds of studies looking at the overall burden of pesticides are so important.
What does the organic label really mean on specifically on fruits and vegetables?
Sure. So the organic program is something that is regulated by the USDA, and they track and regulate what can be used in these fruits and vegetables. And a lot of these really toxic synthetic pesticides and chemicals are not allowed to be used. I mean, we see such a big difference between conventionally grown and organically grown crops, especially with, we had one, it wasn't a part of our shopper's guide because it's not tested for by USDA, but glyphosate was another big one that we had. It's an herbicide that's been linked to elevated risk of cancer. It's been classified by the International Agency for Research on Cancer, probably carcinogenic to humans. And we tested a number of oat-based products, including popular foods that children like to eat. And the recommended limit for glyphosate is the one set. At least our recommended limit for glyphosate in oats is based on the level set by the California Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment. And we found that a lot of these products, almost all of them had high levels of glyphosate in them. Legal levels, however, what we don't consider to be safe. But the organic products had significantly lower levels across the board in all of these types of products, especially the ones that we want people to know that these are you know, breakfast cereals and oatmeal, things like that, that children are exposed to all the time. And so, you know, the organic can definitely help make a difference in reducing that pesticide burden.
Right. And the organic produce have stricter regulations within the USDA. It's got a national list of allowed and prohibited substances that identifies what synthetic and non-synthetic substances are prohibited in organic crop and livestock production. Can you talk about how this works and how it's regulated?
You know, like I said, I'm government affairs and regulation is really not my strong suit. I am more comfortable with the numbers and the testing that we did, but it is definitely a more robust program than what we see with the testing of conventional products.
Okay. And so you also have the Clean 15. And let's talk about this a little bit. A number of fruits and vegetables are on this list. You've got avocados, sweet corn, onions, sweet peas, frozen, kiwis, cauliflower, cantaloupes, broccoli, mushrooms, and honeydew. So this is so interesting to me because, you know, the average person probably thinks, well, strawberries and kale make sense because you're not peeling this. And so it seems like the pesticides would obviously show up in strawberries and kale, but I would think the same thing with things like broccoli, maybe not corn, but asparagus, cauliflower. So can you explain how that works?
Sure. I mean, there's a lot that could go into this, and it would depend on a crop-by-crop basis, where it's farmed, how it's farmed. So different things, they're going to have different needs, which some, farmers choose to use, chemical pesticides to control for. So, I mean, one possibility is things like the honeydew melons and all of that. They have this thick rind. They're harder to get into. Some crops may be less tasty to some pests, less pesticide is necessary there. But it really depends on kind of a crop-by-crop basis, how they're being grown, what's necessary, and the characteristics of the crop itself.
Okay, so maybe for broccoli, they just don't use that many pesticides.
That's possible. All of our testing is based on what USDA found in their testing, what's showing up on shelves. So it's not necessarily a test of what's being used, but what's carrying through that washing and harvesting process and ending up, on people's kitchen tables.
And we're definitely going to talk about access. I mean, for people who cannot afford organic food or for people who do not have access to organic food, would you say that the fruits and the vegetables on the Clean 15 are relatively safe?
Sure. So, that's the whole point of our guide, is to empower people to be able to make these decisions and reduce their body burden of pesticides. So while we think people should eat organic when at all possible, because there's a lot of reasons to eat organic beyond just the pesticides, but we know that not everybody can. It's not always available in your store. It's not always in season. It's not always easy to get. And for a lot of people, it's not always affordable. And that's why we come out with our list. We don't all, it would be easy to just say, put everything on the dirty dozen and eat organic. But instead, that's why we rank which ones are the most contaminated, which ones are the least contaminated, so that people can make the choices that are right for them wherever they are in their life. So if you want to eat a lot of the fruits and vegetables on the dirty dozen, we really want you to be eating organic if you can. However, if you can't, or if you want to save a little bit of money, eating conventional fruits and vegetables off the Clean 15 list are a pretty safe bet. Less than 1% of any of the avocados and corn had any pesticide residue at all. All the samples there, it was a really, really small number. And then out of that entire list of the Clean 15, 70% of those samples had no detectable pesticides. And these aren't organically grown products, and yet there's still a huge number of them that have no pesticides detectable on them. And only a very, very small percentage of all of the samples had two or more pesticides. So if you can't eat all organic all the time, the Clean 15 is a great bet for the fruits and vegetables that it's fine to buy conventional.
And which ones had no pesticide residues?
Unfortunately, I would have to look at, precisely, the data, go back into it, but it's ranked based on those criteria. So the further you get up to the top, the less the fewer pesticides that you're going to see. And like I mentioned, only 1% or less than 1% of avocados and sweet corn had any pesticides at all.
Wow. Okay. So that is the Clean 15. And we should also note that a small amount of sweet corn, papaya, and summer squash sold in the United States is produced from genetically modified seeds. What are your thoughts just about organic today? Because I believe Target is selling more organic foods. Walmart is selling more organic foods. And in those stores, the prices are down. I just read recently, after Amazon bought Whole Foods, that they're actually cutting prices on a number of things. So what are your thoughts about just the cost of organic and the accessibility?
Sure. So like I mentioned, I think that we're seeing a steady increase in the demand for organic produce. It's becoming more common. It's becoming more available. The amount sold has grown steadily over the past years, and it's growing faster than the demand for conventional products. So, and we're seeing that in not only fresh fruits and vegetables, but also in packaged products. So it's becoming more, I guess, mainstream, if you want to call it that. Mm-hmm. And people are definitely having a demand for it. And I think that's in part due to the light that's being shed on the toxicity of these pesticides and on the regulations and the gaps that there are. A lot of people assume that it's all been tested, it's all been deemed safe, and it's all good to go. And that's really not what we're seeing. So I think that goes back into that, you know, consumers do have the power. They do have, you know, if they vote with your wallet, I guess, is the saying, right? So if you're able to, when you're able to, showing that there is a demand for organic products, that demand is growing. More people are becoming aware of the risks of pesticides in food and choosing to opt out of that.
And as much as I love co-ops and independent grocery stores, the organic produce is still pretty expensive. I mean, if you buy a decent amount of it, it really does add up.
Absolutely. It depends on, you know, where and where you're getting it, when you're getting it, what your budget is. It's all very individual, and that's
right.
Why we want to publish the Clean 15. And so we have the Dirty Dozen and the Clean 15, but overall we rank, I think it's somewhere in the ballpark, 47 to 50 different crops. The full list is available in our shopper's guide, so you can see how everything ranks, the things that we did look at when it was last tested. So you have a lot more options if you do want to try and pick and choose between organic and conventional, between the Dirty Dozen and the Clean 15. There's a whole range in between there as well, so you can see the full ranking in our guide.
All right, and we will definitely do a show soon about food deserts. According to a report for Congress by the Economic Research Service of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, just over 2.3 million people live more than 1 mile from a supermarket and do not own a car. So this is still very difficult for a lot of people to have access to these fruits and vegetables. Today we are joined by Sydney Evans, science analyst at the Environmental Working Group. And this is a pre-taped Your Call, so unfortunately we cannot take your phone calls, but we'll definitely do another show about this. Sydney, at the end of the day, you know, what can people do? They want to eat strawberries, and they don't want 81 pesticides on their strawberries. I mean, so many reports have been done about this. I just mentioned The Nation. I mean, you all do amazing work, and then journalists take your reports and write, you know, in-depth pieces. There have been, just Reveal had a great piece about this. What can people do to put pressure on? I guess I should also ask you, are we talking about small farmers? Are we talking about major corporations that are now selling things like strawberries, or is there a difference?
Sure. So, I mean, the guide that we look at, those samples of produce purchased by, or I guess not purchased, but tested by USDA are things that you could get, you know, purchase in your grocery store. So it's whatever is available. And, of course, anything that has that organic label is going to be regulated by FDA to those organic program regulations. And at the end of the day, we just want to make sure that people know that a lot of conventional produce is coming with pesticide residues, that pesticide residues are bad for your health. However, in that case, we don't want people to avoid fruits and vegetables. It is so important to get fruits and vegetables in your diet, and most people probably need to be eating more fresh fruits and veggies than they already are. So that's why, you know, we publish this list, because people do need to be eating their fruits and vegetables and getting that nutrition in their diet, and at the same time making choices that can reduce their pesticide exposure. So, of course, buying organic when possible. When not possible to make your conventional selections from the Clean 15, always, always, always wash your produce, because the levels that we find in the testing and in our report are, after all these vegetables and fruits have been peeled and washed pretty vigorously, so make sure you're doing that. And then, of course, whenever you are able to take this action, it does make an immediate difference. It's not too late. It's never too late. Like these studies have shown, that if switching over to even just a few organic options can make a big difference in the pesticide burden in your body. So, you know, take action to do what you can within your means, and it will make a difference for you and your family. Switching to organic and low pesticide options can make an immediate difference, and that's what we want to empower people to do.
Right, and also just to take action to maybe pressure lawmakers, raise awareness about this so fewer pesticides are used, because I'm thinking about the health of the soil, which affects the ecosystem and then the farm workers and their children. I mean, there are just so many other effects of just such massive pesticide use.
Right, and that's why we want people, there are more reasons than just this to buy the organic produce. Overall, just better environmental and public health stewardship, but we know that's not always possible. But that is why we do, you know, tell people and recommend that people eat organic when possible, and, you know, not just eating fruits and veggies on the Clean 15. There's a lot more that goes into it. So that is important.
And do you know, you mentioned earlier that we don't really know how we're affected by such a wide range of pesticides. Are studies being done about focusing on that?
Right. So that's, you know, a lot is being done about that. And that's why so many studies now are focusing, instead of trying to figure out exactly which pesticides are having which effects in which combinations, looking at that overall pesticide burden, like the French organic study and like the Harvard University Earth Study and other organic diet studies that have come out, because it's so hard to determine. And the science is always going to be developing on individual safety measures and individual exposures, but looking at that overall top-down version, it's going to give us the best picture of what we can do that's going to make a difference, and that's going to really going to reflect what we're being exposed to on a regular basis.
Well, Sydney, thank you so much for joining us. I love the work that you all do with the Environmental Working Group. It is so incredibly important, and we'd love to have you back so we can have you on with our callers, because I'm sure they have a lot of additional questions. Thank you for your work, and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Sydney Evans is a science analyst at the Environmental Working Group. You can find them at ewg.org. They do great work. They empower people to live healthier lives in a healthier environment. And you can find more information about the Dirty Dozen, pesticides, and the Clean 15 at yourcallradio.org. Thanks to Malihe Razazan for producing today's show. Thanks to Laura Wenis for line producing. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call's One Planet series.